Okay. So Leslie, let's just give it another minute for people to continue signing on, and we'll get the show going.
Yes, that sounds pretty good. I was just looking at some of the results of late on some of the patient engagement initiatives, and we have a lot to be proud of. So I can't wait for Mark to talk about some of his achievements and what the partnership has done.
Yeah.
But it's pretty cool. I mean, things like people just assume they can get access. It might be hard to ask the question, but they assume they're going to have access, and they assume that care is coordinated. And now for a chance, they can be. And they can have access.
I think we're sending out an email today that says, welcome to the 21st century.
Yeah. My daughter was going in for care and just appalled. And she said, Mom, I got there, and they didn't see me for 40 minutes. I said, really? She said, yes, but I told them my time was valuable, and I left. I said, okay.
It's a different generation. We all used to just sit and wait. But Leslie, do you want to? It's just after 2 p.m. Eastern. Do you want to go ahead and start?
Sure, I can get started. Well, welcome all of you that are joining, and thank you for attending. We're excited today to hear from Mark Savage of the National Partnership. But some housekeeping items first. Everyone, please mute your line when you're not speaking. You can either do that on your own phone or push *6 to mute and *7 to unmute. And the call is being recorded, as we often or always do, in order to allow members to be able to listen and see presentations at a future date. And we find that people find that valuable, not just to attend in person, but also to hear the recording. So we thank you for participating in that. So today we are going to hear from Mark, but before that, I'd like to really remind all of you about the eHeart Conference coming up October 4th through the 5th. This is going to be a really interesting conference, and we will be participating, this work group will be participating in a panel. We'll be looking for input from all of you about questions you might like to ask, how you might like to get more involved. So we look forward to you attending the session. Those of you who have not come to this kind of conference at EHI, it's really interactive. It's not as much just didactic learning. There's a lot of interaction and communication and the ability to really hear what thought leaders are doing and listen to very provocative questions being asked and those answers given. And it's a lot of fun because it's a small group. It's held at a really wonderful venue. And I know I always learn something and meet new people that help to progress the agenda of patient engagement and also to learn more about how people are reacting to this plethora of change in clinical and business drivers in healthcare. So a little reminder about the goals of the where are we? Okay. Sorry about that, Claudia. The goals of the work group and timelines and deliverables. The council is we are really creating a business case that describes how people are reacting with innovation in health IT to the new business and clinical drivers that are just sweeping us all in change and change management efforts. So what this group is doing is looking at ways that apps and technology can help to make sure that we're working in harmony. And the idea of patients and providers, this new ecosystem is emerging and will change the way we all participate or practice and care in the future. So we are hoping to provide great business cases and examples. So the goals of this group are really about how to identify those business drivers of moving technology, what's the value proposition, explain the technologies that are creating the momentum, describe the patient experience, describe how insurance benefits may cover change or may not, and what the future of innovation in these areas are, and what are the factors that came together when people are describing their initiatives to respond to all of this change. So as we work towards our deliverables this year, we want to identify, understand, and communicate those successful examples of innovative users, and we have gone all over the map, from payers to providers to patient engagement. We heard from government, from health exchanges, and today we'll hear from policy leadership, all of which work together to really respond with innovation across their respective areas. So we hope to get two examples and set some overarching recommendations will be made by the group, and then we will identify priorities and recommend to federal partners and other policy leaders some specific action that can be taken to model these successful initiatives and promote and disseminate this information and skill. So we hope to have 20 examples. We're well on our way. We do need your input. We want to understand from the industry the barriers, the purpose, the initial successes, what's worked, and why. We would like to hear from you, your clients, your friends, people that you know of that are doing innovative responses to all this change. And if you know of someone you'd like to see highlighted, then please contact Claudia. So our current success stories that we have today are from the American Heart Association, who talks about some very innovative, engaging technology that they're using with patients, with LabCorp that talked about how much of their work is really generated by the patient. They and their response to patient-generated orders for their lab, the portal response to that information, a real disintermediary of sorts in healthcare, quite innovative. We hear from Chris and Validic and Colorado, all giving us examples of how to interoperate across a broad ecosystem. And we hope soon to hear from CVS MinuteClinic, another disruptor in innovation and responder to consumer needs. Today, we are going to hear from Mark Savage from the National Partnership for Women and Families. Some of you may not know, but the partnership has been absolutely instrumental in providing policy, thought leadership, and nudges to leaders to make sure that the patients aren't left out of health reform, to make sure that we have access to medical records, that we can view, download, and transmit, that we have the standards necessary for interoperability that includes the patient. They've been behind most of the patient engagement initiatives that we've seen in the last 3 years, or 5 years, even more. And I'm very, very proud to say that I work with the National Partnership and Mark Savage. Mark brings us a great deal of wonderful skills. He has oversees the National Partnership's Health IT strategy and advances the use of health information technology throughout policy to support patients, their caregivers, for disenfranchised people, for people with special needs and socioeconomic status. He also sits on several health IT policy committees, including the Strategy and Innovation Work Group and the Advanced Health Models and Use Work Group, and many, many more. He is he's a consumer representative on the board of directors for the California Integrated Data Exchange, and so he has a wide range of exposure across the nation. And prior to joining the partnership, he was a senior attorney at Consumers Union. So Mark is not a stranger to the needs of consumers and patients, and has been a formidable ally and catalyst for change in policies that we've seen in D.C. So thank you, and welcome, Mark Savage.
Thank you so much, Leslie, and thanks to everybody for inviting me to be with you today. If you want to go to the next slide, please. A little bit about the National Partnership. For those of you who don't know, we're a nonprofit, nonpartisan consumer organization with 45 years of experience working on issues important to women and families. These divide largely into health and care and then workplace fairness. And on the health side, you can see that we've got six health teams in different areas: health policy, patient engagement, quality measurement, reproductive health, maternity care, and health information technology. And the National Partnership has a dedicated team on health IT because that is often the backbone and infrastructure for the other key areas of work and policy. Next slide, please. We also convened the Consumer Partnership for eHealth, a coalition that we've convened since 2005. And it's the only consumer coalition, to our knowledge, that's dedicated to advancing health IT for people and families across the country. Over 50 consumer, patient, and labor organizations working at national, state, and local levels, collectively representing more than 127 million Americans. The Consumer Partnership understands how critical it is that we move from a system of paper health records and file folders to electronic health records that allow patients and families to have secure online access and use for care planning. And the coalition amplifies the consumer voice in policy on multi-stakeholder committees and in the media. I find for us it's been critical teamwork. We rely on the diverse coalition members to share with us their experience, needs, and priorities on the ground so that we can help build a system that works for everyone. And we, in turn, are able to brief them on the key issues, solutions, and opportunities where we need their guidance and input. Next slide, please. So I want to begin with a little level setting from the perspective of individuals and families. And some of you will already know this well, perhaps from a provider or vendor perspective, but it still helps to sketch how patients and consumers might see things. Not so long ago, when HITECH was passed in 2009, the adoption rate for VHRs was relatively low, 21.8% for doctors, 12.2% for hospitals. But by the end of 2014, that jumped to over 50% for doctors, over 75% for hospitals, and that's 2014. That's even higher today. In 2009, patients had a right to a copy of their health records, but that was in 30 to 90 days under HIPAA. The health information exchange was often a fax machine or worse, and care coordination from a patient's perspective might be the patient unloading a box from a car trunk at the next visit with the doctor. Today, patients can have electronic access to their health information within 4 business days of availability. So in short, from the perspective of patients and caregivers, family caregivers, health IT empowers them to be much more active and engaged in their care, accessing their health information through patient portals, communicating through secure messaging, contributing relevant health data, not just passively receiving it, and becoming much more informed decision makers and partners in their care planning and in their health care. Next slide, please. So I want to begin with a survey that the National Partnership did to report on some of the findings so that you all can hear what patients across the country had to say. The National Partnership has conducted 2 nationwide surveys on how consumers value and use health IT. The first was in 2011. In 2014, we conducted our second one to assess trends from 2011 and then also new issues, given all that had happened since our first survey. The respondent pool was unique. I haven't seen another respondent pool like this in the various surveys that I've reviewed. We asked people, do you have an ongoing relationship with a main doctor? And secondly, do you know what kind of a record system, electronic or paper, that your doctor is using? So consequently, the responses about health record systems are based on actual experience, because if the person didn't know what kind of system the doctor was using, we did not keep them in the pool. Harris Poll weighted the sample to be demographically representative of the U.S. population. We did do oversamples of the Latino, Black, and Asian communities to try to make sure that traditionally underserved communities were fully represented. Many of the questions remain the same as they had been in 2011 in order to preserve trending, but we also added questions on some major new topics, such as patient participation in care planning, patient-generated health data, and mobile access. So with this survey, we heard what consumers have to say, and I'll share some of the results with you. Next slide, please. We surveyed the patients on key issues such as the importance and helpfulness of electronic health records, online access and use of their health information, care planning, patient-generated health data, designing and building for diversity such as non-English language access and accessibility for people with disabilities. We got a rich trove of detail about patients' views. As we sifted through all of this detail, we discerned 7 key findings and strategies for patient engagement, and you've got a summary of them there on the slide. First, patients did find that electronic health records were much more useful than paper records. Second, they found that the basic convenience features could be very beneficial, just as they do with access. Third, they reported that more online access actually enhanced their health care. Fourth, they want to share health information with their care providers. They want the communication to be bidirectional, not one-directional. Fifth, they want better digital tools to help them manage care and plan for their health care. Sixth, the more that they experience the benefits of EHRs and online access, actually the more they trust their providers to protect their privacy. And seventh, not surprisingly, the benefits and barriers of EHRs and health information are not the same for everyone, and so we must design and build for that diversity. Next slide, please. So starting off with the first finding, we asked the patients to compare the usefulness of electronic and paper records, and it was very interesting to hear what they had to say. This chart summarizes the findings, and both electronic health record patients and paper record patients alike concluded that EHRs were significantly more useful for health and health care. Across the board, patients found EHRs more useful by 20 percentage points or more. This is true for key domains such as helping patients follow the doctor's treatment instructions, helping patients take and refill medications as prescribed, helping patients track progress toward health goals. Indeed, nearly half of the patients whose doctors used paper record systems believe that switching to EHR systems would have a positive impact on the overall quality of their healthcare services. Next slide, please. So we then asked patients to consider more specifically how useful electronic and paper record systems were to their doctors and staff, and how useful the record systems were to patients personally. And this slide asks them specifically about how helpful they were to patients personally. The two areas where patients rated EHRs most useful to them personally were sharing information with all of their providers and avoiding repeatedly filling out forms, which, as everyone who has a child in summer camp or school can appreciate, after repeatedly filling out all those same forms. Interestingly, on the features that were the same or very similar on and useful to the patient, patients rated the helpfulness of those features to their physicians much higher than the helpfulness to themselves. So this was sharing information, keeping up with medications, and finding and correcting errors.
Excuse me, David, sorry, Mark, I'm just going to stop you for just a second. Could everyone please mute your lines? We're hearing some feedback from somewhere. So everyone except for Mark, please mute your lines. Thank you.
Sure, thanks. So we concluded from the fact that they were rating the usefulness to doctors significantly higher than the usefulness to themselves, that people perceive EHRs to be less helpful to patients than to physicians. And this may not be surprising at this point in time, but this paradigm does need to change. It's an opportunity for innovation if we want to successfully engage patients and their families and improve health outcomes. Next slide, please. We also looked more closely at online access and the impact of online access. So in 2014, 50% of EHR patients had online access, and this was up from 26% in 2011. So in 3 years, you saw a doubling in the number of Americans with access to their doctor's treatment instructions and care plans, for example. And we found that when patients have online access, 86% used it at least once per year. 55% used it 3 or more times per year. And the more they use it, the data showed, the more they trust their providers to protect their privacy and other patient rights. This has huge implications for the success of new delivery models such as ACOs and new payment models such as APMs under MACRA, which need engaged patients to succeed. Next slide, please. More frequent online access has an even more dramatic impact. The more frequent users of online access reported a markedly greater impact across significant domains, 20 percentage points higher. more frequently individuals access their health information online, the more they report that it motivates them to do something to improve their health. 71% for frequent users compared with 39% for infrequent users. Knowledge of health jumped from 63% to 88%. Quality of care jumped from 40% to 75%. Sharing health information with family caregivers jumped from 32% to 59%. So this reaffirms the conclusion that online access is a game changer and should have a great impact on improving care for patients and interoperability with patients. Next slide, please. We asked patients which activities they would do with online access to the health information. The features they most desire largely mirror the features with which we are most familiar today: the ability to review test results and medical records, email doctors and staff, schedule appointments, request medication refills. This may well change, however, as patients have increasingly greater exposure to new features and apps, as well as the ability to register their preferences for features to meet their own health needs. Point out the bottom line there, only 10% of patients said they would do nothing. Next slide, please. In 2014, we added some new questions on care planning and caregiving, an area of great interest to the National Partnership and the Consumer Partnership for Health, and, of course, an area of considerable importance for family members taking care of parents, children, or relatives with chronic conditions. Here, too, 89% of EHR patients and 81% of paper record patients reported that online access to a family member's health information would be very or somewhat useful. Next slide, please. We asked patients more specifically to assess the usefulness of EHRs and paper record systems regarding some key privacy and trust domains, a very big topic. Patients find EHRs significantly more useful and more protective of privacy across key domains, and conversely find paper record systems significantly less protective of privacy, especially in letting patients see who has accessed their medical information, giving them more control over how their medical information is used beyond direct care, and getting their trust. In general, we found that the more patients experience the benefits of EHRs, the more they trust providers to protect their privacy. And the more they trust that their privacy is protected, the more they use and benefit from EHRs. However, we also found that more work needs to be done to educate consumers about how their information is collected, used, and protected. They said that they wanted to know more than what they were actually getting from their providers. Next slide, please. So we always ask, access and care for whom? As we are designing health information exchange and health electronic health records for the nation, we have an opportunity to consider needs and avoid barriers instead of building barriers in. Who are the people at the center of care? How do we better understand their diversity and design for their diverse needs? So here's just a snapshot from the 2010 census that we always keep front of mind. 58 million people ages 5 and over speak languages other than English at home. 56 million people live with a functional or cognitive disability. 57 million people identify as Black or African American, Asian, Pacific Islander, or American Indian. The Hispanic population reached 50.5 million, which is an increase of 43% in a decade. And it may be an undercount, but the current estimates are that the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community totals 9 million people. So obviously the system cannot be one size fits all. There is not an average patient, an average consumer, and we have an opportunity to design a system that works for everyone. Next slide, please. So in our survey, we analyzed the survey results to discern whether there are different preferences, needs, and experiences, or different barriers for diverse populations. And for example, we found that Hispanic adults were significantly more likely than non-Hispanic whites, 78% compared to 55%, to say that having online access increases their desire to do something about their health. Asian American adults were among the most likely to report that EHRs are helpful to them in sharing information with all of their health providers. And African American adults were among the most likely to report that EHRs are helpful to them in finding and correcting errors and keeping up with their medications. So the survey results showed us clearly that different subpopulations value health IT for different reasons. And these insights about the specific needs, values, and barriers experienced by subpopulations can provide critical guidance on how LPID and new delivery and payment models can help to reduce health disparities. We think the results should also help providers, vendors, and policymakers design and build for that very real diversity so that patients can be engaged in a variety of ways and diverse people and communities can all achieve better care. Next slide, please. Lastly, we looked at mobile access across diverse communities. Hispanic, African American, and Asian American patients were significantly more likely to have used a smartphone or tablet to access their health information. And Hispanic, Asian American, and LGBT individuals were significantly more likely to want to use mobile access. So another takeaway, the increased attention to mobile apps and APIs and new delivery models for better access and usability is timely and very important. Next slide, please. So when we sifted through these and all the other survey results, we discerned that they implicated some key strategies for patient engagement, and you see them up on the chart there. Some strategies might work best for some patients, other strategies for others. For example, convenience features might be most effective for one person, while care planning might be most important and effective for another person with a chronic condition. Moreover, different strategies might work best for people depending on where they are in their life. For example, the same person might find online access the most effective way to be engaged when relatively healthy, but electronic sharing and communication might become more effective if the person acquires certain health conditions at a later phase in life. For some, reassurance about privacy might be the most important first strategy in order to get them to begin using online access to increase trust. And building digital tools and systems that recognize and meet the diversity of patients can also be critical. Next slide, please. So an overall point, that the survey asked patients about their views broadly without reference to any particular statutes or policies. We didn't ask about the Meaningful Use Program or any other federal state programs. Instead, we asked questions about EHR functions and uses, what might bring the most value to consumers. And so we think these survey results provide important guidance for the range of federal policies, but also the range of private initiatives, including interoperability efforts, quality measure, payment and delivery system reforms that folks on the phone might be engaged in. We've lifted up just a few on this page. The report itself identifies policy implications in detail in its concluding chapter. Obviously, for example, increasing online access is going to be a game changer and can help across a variety of programs and private initiatives, for example. And promoting mobile access will also be very helpful. So that's just a brief dive into some of the survey findings. Go to the next slide, please. I want to shift now to how the National Partnership has worked to build what patients have had to say into current policy and practice. Most of you on the phone may know about the Meaningful Use Program and the HITECH Act of 2009, which drove EHR adoption and interoperability from the rates that I mentioned earlier in 2009 to the present. Just to level set, there's three stages. Because one could not transform the nation's health information infrastructure on a dime, and so you've got strategic phased approach in three stages. It went from basic data collection and use to more robust data collection and information exchange to what we hope in stage three will be improved outcomes, quality, and health. And the notion is that this is a program that's for Medicare and Medicaid providers, but that once these providers have adopted the electronic health records, they will be used for all of their patients, not just their Medicare and Medicaid patients. So if you go to the next slide, please. So here you can see on one page the evolution from stage one to stage three in elements that especially reached patients and how important it has been, what a transformation it has been. In stage one, you got an after-visit summary there in red font at the bottom. In stage two, you had online access within 4 days to your medical record. In stage three, you'll have online access within 48 hours through portals and apps. Stage 2 added secure messaging between patients and doctors. Stage 3 adds bidirectional access to health data, so patients can now contribute, and doctors now have access to patient-generated health data that they didn't have before. Stage 3 finally adds patient goals to clinical goals and summary of care records for referrals. And the Medicare Access and Trip Reauthorization Act, or MACRA, which is where the proposed regulations are being considered now, incorporates these same measures in the Advancing Care Information Performance category. So this gives you a snapshot of how the work over the past 5 years to build in functions that patients and family caregivers need is reaching fruition and sets the stage for efforts to come. Next slide, please. So a little more detail about what this means for patients and families. VDT, or View, Download, Transmit, and APIs provide ready access to one's health information. And as I noted earlier, that's critical. It may be, what does that mean? It may be online access to hospital discharge instructions after surgery. It may be a mother's access to her new baby's care plan over the first 6 months of caregiving. It could be a family caregiver's access to an aging parent's health data to help monitor health care from a different state. So stage 3 requires doctors to provide patients with access to view this information online, to download and transmit it electronically. Stage 3 also allows authorized representatives to access, so that's family caregivers. And it's 48 hours, not the 30 to 90 days that I had mentioned earlier with the HIPAA privacy rule. And lastly, it adds a new way of access through applications connected to application programming interfaces, or APIs, such as smartphone apps. It added secure messaging. It adds secure messaging and patient-specific education resources based on the patient's problem list and the medication list. Next slide, please. Second key area of accomplishment for patients and family caregivers is integrating patient journey to health data and outcomes. You've got bidirectional exchange, and now providers are incorporating patient-generated health data, but also health data from non-clinical settings. So in the traditional sense of patient-generated health data, that might be something like family medical history, something doctors have relied on for quite a while. But now it also might include advanced directives, birth plans, medical device data, home health monitoring data, patient-reported outcomes. When I was at a conference, an AMIA conference back in 2012, one of the folks stood up and said that the most important thing missing from the medical record was the patient's report of whether she or he got better or worse after the office visit. Now with patient-generated health data, we have the opportunity to get that into the record. Also, information about social services and community resources, information about social determinants of health. This last piece, social determinants of health, is really important for the future because, as we know, clinical care determines only an estimated 10 to 15% of health. The remaining 85 to 90% of health is determined by other factors such as health behaviors, genetics, socioeconomic and physical environment. And these are things that can now begin to be incorporated into the electronic health record with stage 3. Next slide, please. Third area that I wanted to give a little greater focus is care planning. So shared care planning is critical, and in Stage 3 and MACRA, for the first time, the summary of care records are going to begin to capture patient goals along with the provider goals. They're going to begin to capture family caregivers along with the clinical caregivers, the patient's health concerns along with the provider's health concerns. This is critical. For example, the doctor's clinical goal might be to reduce the patient's A1C blood level to a particular number. The patient may not understand what that number means. The patient's goal might be to dance at her son's wedding. So you can have a common outcome, but knowing how the doctor articulates the goal, but also knowing how the patient articulates the goal, may provide that essential communication to make sure that you get to a better health outcome. This is going to be very important to patients and families, and this information will now get transferred from one setting of care to another, and all referrals from one provider to another, say to a specialist. The 2015 edition of Certified EHR Technology also includes a care plan function, so that you can now have not just a care plan for a specific episode, but also a longitudinal care plan that synthesizes multiple care plans across settings and time. And this allows people to see a more comprehensive view of care, another critical advance. Next slide, please. Lastly, I'll just cover in a little more detail the area of health disparities, which is an initiative of the National Partnership, something we also care deeply about. The new 2015 edition of Certified EHRs does much new to help identify and address health disparities, and MACRA builds upon this definition by incorporating Certified Health IT. So demographics, the 2015 edition captures much more granular data on race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender identity, preferred language, so that that can be used for clinical decision support, can be used to provide services to patients. There's a common clinical data set, which adds information about functional and cognitive status for persons with disabilities, so the doctor, too, knows to be prepared for the office visit. Social, psychological, and behavioral data. So as I mentioned earlier, this is the beginning ability to begin to capture social determinants of health. And lastly, a clinical quality measure filter, which allows the provider to filter quality measures by disparity variables in order to begin to spot areas where disparities might exist so that the doctor can begin to address them. So again, making great new advances in the area of addressing health disparities. Next slide, please. So notice that all the functions that I've just been covering are just the kinds of functions that are essential for interoperability with patients, which is a key goal in the National Interoperability Roadmap, because interoperability with patients, too, is just as important as interoperability among providers. They are essential in new models of delivery system reform, where providers will depend for their success on more activated and engaged patients. So, again, think back just 5 years. These advances in access in patient-generated health data, shared care planning, reducing health disparities were not on the national landscape in this way at that time. And today, the landscape for patients and family caregivers across the country has dramatically improved. Next slide, please. So now let's begin looking forwards a little. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services has proposed regulations to implement MACRA. And those proposed regulations integrate these key health IT advances in the advancing care information and clinical practice improvement activities performance categories that you see on the lower left there, which is 40% collectively of the performance score. Next slide, please. So I've already talked about the meaningful use measures which are incorporated in the advanced care information performance category. So let's look briefly at the clinical practice improvement activities category. The proposed regulations have 9 categories and list eligible activities for each subcategory. Here are just a few. So in the beneficiary engagement category, for example, a practice of engaging patients, family, and caregivers in developing a plan of care and prioritizing their goals for action and documenting that in the Certified EHR technology. Shared care planning. In care coordination, developing pathways to neighborhood and community-based resources to help support patient health goals, which is something that every patient is doing already in their day-to-day lives, but now it gets recognized and used in the doctor's EHR. Lastly, the achieving health equity subcategory, screening for social determinants of health such as food security, employment, and housing. So each of these clinical practice improvement activities leverages person-centered health IT for better health and better care. Next slide, please. So lastly, Leslie asked me to close with some thoughts about the future. Let's start with a quick review of the road that patient access and interoperability have taken and where we're headed. And as I've said, it's been a pretty significant transition, if long overdue. The HIPAA right of access in 2003, the HIPAA privacy rule provided that patients have a right to their health information within 30 to 90 days. Now, 30 to 90 days might not be fast enough in many situations, but it was a start in 2003. Then we had the high-tech right of electronic access in 2009, where the High-Tech Act explicitly provided that patients have a right to obtain their data in an electronic format if the provider has the data in an EHR, and shortened the time frame through regulations to 30 to 60 days. Then Blue Button, next on the road. The Office of the National Coordinator announced the program where organizations voluntarily committed that patients could get their health data electronically. Then Meaningful Use, where now the Meaningful Use program will provide online access in 36 to 48 hours, including access by mobile apps and APIs under Stage 3. OCR guidance earlier this year, 2016, the Office for Civil Rights issued guidance affirming that patients have a right to electronic copies of their health data free of charge if accessed through certified EHR technology, helping to remove much of the confusion that has existed as we transition from paper records to electronic records. MACRA. So now with MACRA and 21st Century Cures and the Precision Medicine Initiative and the Cancer Moonshot, we're striving to bring together clinical, patient, and social data. We're striving to create a longitudinal health record, synthesizing health information across the patient's many settings of care. And in short, the two graphics on the slide are both a reminder of how far we've come and a reminder of what's still in the future, what's needed. Key functions have been online access, patient-generated health data, and shared care plans. They're essential, but they are also the things that are essential to enable efforts like the Precision Medicine Initiative. They are the building blocks for patients to access and contribute their own health data from multiple settings of care into longitudinal health records and care plans. And the electronic access and health information exchange are what allow patients to and doctors to integrate the relevant health data from community resources and social services so they have a picture of a more comprehensive picture of health. In short, this is the model that the Precision Medicine Initiative and the Cancer Moonshot are using, where cohorts of individuals are able to contribute their individual health data for critical population health research and then have access to the results and better health and care. So as we've said, patient access and interoperability have been a game changer for now, and they will be a game changer for the future. Thanks very much. Glad to take any questions.
Thanks, Mark. That's great, it is really great to highlight how much has happened in a very short period of time. And I think we get impatient for change, but we've certainly moved the needle in this area. In fact, some of the most successful and quickly adopted measures within meaningful use have been around patient engagement measures, where I think we're at 90-plus percent patients receiving education materials in the high, I think it was 70% is the access, and even in patient-generated health data, we're already above 30%. So things are moving quite quickly. I had a couple of questions before, so I've got some from the group. One is, back to the study itself. One is, when patients are finding and correcting errors in the EHR, that's a great feature. Do we have any idea yet how often this is used?
Let me see if I can pull this out. Pardon the pause. So I'm looking at one chart from the from our survey report, and the 63% said that the EHR had a positive impact on their ability to correct information in their electronic health record. More frequent access had an even greater impact. So for those who accessed three or more times per year, it was 71% compared to only 48% for those who accessed 1 to 2 times per year. So something that they're using, and something that, of course, that depends on having access. And it, as your question points out, a tremendous help to doctors to be able to base their clinical decision support and their recommendations on an accurate health record instead of on errors.
The fact that the in testimony at the ONC, we received information to really corroborate that, and that was a physician who indicated that medication errors, medication reconciliation was a huge area where patients were saying, hey, I don't take that med, I don't have that med, and her quote was, I'm a better doctor. And I think we lose sight of the importance of that desire of the provider to know the correct information in order to provide good care.
And to take it to its ultimate, the ultimate possibility, somebody might be alive because of it, because some of those medication errors might actually be an allergy that causes death.
Absolutely. Another question that came up is, if in the survey report there was any look at patients over 65 and how their response was to HIT or their caregiver.
We did. I don't have the detailed findings in front of me, but from memory, the one thing that I think really stood out is this myth that people over 65 are not using health IT. They don't know how. They're not using it. And instead, we found very active use of health IT in patients over 65 across a range of domains.
Yep, that's been the case. We found that, too. So another somewhat politically charged question, and that was, do you see this trend in patient engagement being impacted by the election outcome?
I think as long as the effort of folks on the phone, private initiatives and public policy that's happening at both federal and state level continues on the current trajectory, as it must, in order to bend the cost curve, as it must, in order to improve patient outcomes, then the election itself isn't going to change the need. It's not going to change the need for doctors to provide. So that would be my – I think this is one of those things which is sort of bigger than the election. You can see that the need is much greater.
Right, and we might want to remind the group that the work of the Office of National Coordinator was actually started under President Bush and continued then through President Obama, and had large bipartisan support for this work, as we all are patients participating in care and benefiting from care.
And the Consumer Partnership for eHealth was founded in 2005, so its work to do and all the things that we sort of summarized on this webinar is the work over multiple administrations and Congresses.
Mm-hmm. And I know personally have found a warm reception on the Hill when talking about patient engagement initiatives. And the fact that the usage has grown so dramatically, so quickly with access and patient education and the other things you mentioned, shows that there was a need, a pent-up demand, and a positive response from the providers. Are there other questions from the group? Let's see. One question, Mark, was about, have you seen or interviewed organizations, either providers, payers, or HIT vendors, who have really embraced and provided great examples of how this has benefited their organization? Some highlights into the good innovators in the country.
Well, actually, maybe this would be a good time to tell a personal story. Back when I started working on Health IT, my doctor at the time did not have an electronic health record, so I exercised my consumer prerogative and I shopped. And I went to a doctor who did have an electronic health record and told him what I was doing for a living, and he was willing to answer some questions for me. He said he had only recently gotten an EHR, and I asked him a little bit about that, and he said, he was the head of his practice. He said he was not able to attract the best and the brightest coming out of medical school to his practice because they would say, "Do you have an EHR?" And he'd say, "No," and so they wouldn't give him any consideration. So he initially adopted an electronic health record in order to be able to find docs to work with him in his practice. That got him in the door. That got him trying it for himself. And he said once he'd done it, he would never go back. I watched how he used that with me. So one of the complaints that people have said is, oh my, there's this computer in between the doctor and the patient. That's not the only way to use it. And in fact, he used that as a way to invite me to look at the clinical decision support information with him so we could talk through what kinds of options he was looking at, what kinds of choices were available. That made me a more informed patient about what was going on. I was more engaged. I understood what the condition was, and I was more, frankly, I was a little more committed to the outcomes because I understood the process. So I think that's a good success story in and of itself, and it shows why it's important for the transformation of the practice as well.
Yeah, that's a very clear business driver for adopting some of these things. I wonder too, are there any particular standout providers that you've seen that have really embraced this? I think of, well, I'll let you answer that, and then I have a suggestion as well.
Well, we've only just begun to do interviews of providers about their patient portals, which would be the place to check about how they are trying to meet patients' needs for access. And we don't have the results of those interviews yet. Let me pivot a little bit and say that something I didn't cover in my remarks. I think an area where we really are looking forward to some further development is in the share care planning tools. The Consumer Partnership ReHealth did some important work in looking at what care plans 2.0 might be now that we're in an electronic environment. It was very important to folks providing us with advice to leverage the electronic platform and to look at care planning more as a process, not a static document. Because if it's a static document, the moment anything changes, everything has to change. And instead you want it like we have in so many other areas. We want to be able to just update it and continue using it. So a lot of the current work, looking at patient portals, looking at information exchange, incorporating data fields, that's important. But the next thing that we need, where we need to find standouts, is in shared care planning, where we start using that for care planning functions.
It brings up a really good point around shared decision making. Now, Group Health instituted a policy where they took every patient or every physician and trained them how to do shared decision making, because they had, after participating in a small group of 2,000 patients, determined that they had the highest patient satisfaction scores that they had ever had in their history. And so they had enabled a new training and a new process to support this, and really believe that as patients are more informed and engaged, that care is improved. I wanted to ask others in the group, too, if they had questions. Len, Jake, Vera, Tom, I see a bunch of you on the line. Do any of you have specific questions for Mark?
Yeah, this is Len. I don't have any questions. Mark, I think it's an excellent presentation, and appreciate the effort that you and your organization have put into performing the survey and analyzing the results. But I have no specific questions.
Thanks so much. Thanks. This is a good time to shout out. It takes a village. Thank you, too.
It does take a village, and I think all of us now have benefited from it. Well, let's go on to our next step, then. Thank you so much, Mark. And
you're welcome.
What if you can go to the next step? So we have our next work group meeting on September 21st. We're looking for other additional success stories and welcome people's input, suggestions, and nominations. And then please make sure that you continue your partnership and participate in as a council member. Next slide, please. Please contact Claudia and let her know if you have any suggestions. We've heard now from a wide, varied source of innovators, and we would like to hear from more. So I thank you all for your time and attention. And, Mark, we just thank you not only for this presentation, but the work you've done to make it all easier for us to participate in our own healthcare.
So glad to help.
All righty. Well, thank you, everyone, and have a great afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Mark. Thanks, Leslie.
Okay. Yep. Bye-bye.